This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
Salatu wassalamu ala rasulillah wa ba'd. Alright, so alhamdulillah, welcome to our program tonight on organ donation and transplantation in Islam. This is a topic which is very relevant to us today because there are many important issues about organ donation and about organ transplantation. Let me just start with the definition. So the definition, when we're talking about an organ, sometimes we think about like, we think like only a heart or a hand or a kidney or something like that. But when we say organ, it's used in a very loose way. So this is actually talking about giving an organ or some part of the body to a recipient who needs something, like a kidney, a heart, a liver, a lung. It can even be a cornea of the eye. It can be skin. It can be blood. It can be bone marrow. It could be so many different parts of the body. So when it means an organ, we're not only talking about like, you know, a larger part of the body, but we're talking about any part of the body that could actually be transplanted to another person. Now, the statistics say that every 27 minutes, there is an organ transplant that's taking place in the world today. So by the time we finish this lecture, two or three organ transplants would have already been done. So there's a lot of organ transplantation taking place in the world. But every 2 hours and 24 minutes, somebody dies waiting in line for an organ that they needed but they did not receive. So this is where the issue becomes very important, and there are certain considerations that we need to look at. So in 2015, there was a study done with data from 104 countries, which represents 90% of the global population. And they said that 127,000 solid organs, solid, not blood and liquid and all that stuff, but solid organs were transplanted just in that year, 2015. And out of all of those 127,000 transplants, 41.8% of them were living kidney transplants, and 21% were living liver transplants. This is very important when we talk about Islam status and what the different fatwas are on this topic, because I want you to keep this statistic in mind. So 41% living kidney transplants were all the transplants that happened in the entire world. 21% were living liver transplants. Living meaning that the donor was living. They were not deceased. Okay? And then out of that same number of 127,000, there's 32,800 deceased donors giving other stuff. Okay? So in the United States alone, 2017, there were 34,770 transplants. And 7,000 people died waiting for a transplant. And 80% of the ones that died, guess which organ they were waiting for? Kidney. Okay, kidney. So, with that said, the question is, why do people donate? And why do they not donate? Why are organ transplants taking place? And why are they not taking place? Why are some people, you know, either not giving their organs, or why are they unable to give for some reason? Well, when it comes to the attitude that people have towards organ donation, there are seven main factors that influence their decision whether they're going to donate or not donate. It doesn't matter whether they're donating while they're alive or they're donating while they're dead and they're signing up for a donor card. But there's seven main reasons. The first reason is whether or not they're giving it to family. So there are people, I'm not talking about Muslims here, I'm talking about just people in general. There are many people who say, I would give it to my close family member, but I'm not going to give it to a non-family member. Second reason is religion, and we'll talk more about that. Different religions have different restrictions when it comes to organ donation. The third is culture. If donating is part of your culture, then you're more, you know, likely going to be donating. Number four is family pressure or family influence, right? So if your family is really convincing you to, you know, either sign up to be an organ donor or donate to a specific person, it's going to play a role. Number five is body integrity. depending on what, you know, what kind of body you have. Number six is, and also body integrity, the same category comes in terms of what's going to happen to your body later on, right, if you donate. Number six is people's attitude towards the healthcare system. So if you are mistrusting of the healthcare system and you don't trust pharmaceutical companies and you're a little bit skeptical of doctors because of your previous experience and all that, it's going to affect whether or not you want to donate. And number seven is fear of early organ retrieval. Okay, what fear of early organ retrieval basically means is they say, I'm concerned that if I get into a car accident and I end up in the hospital, they're just going to take my organs out before I'm even dead and it's going to kill me. So there's a concern that people have. So these are seven main reasons why people, seven reasons that affect people's attitude towards donating in the first place. Now, in terms of religion, this is the main thing we're focusing on about Islam's stance. But let's look at other religions. Who are the people, from their religious perspective, they're a little bit skeptical of donating? So among the groups, we have some Native Americans. In their religion, there's an issue with donating organs. There are gypsies, Roma gypsies, if you've ever heard of the gypsy people, there's also a concern that they have. Confucianists also have a concern with organ donation. Shintoists, people who practice the Shinto religion, have a concern. Some Orthodox Jews and Orthodox rabbis have a concern. Buddhism mostly is against the practice of organ donation because it's disrespecting the bodies of ancestors and is considered to be something against nature. Jehovah's Witnesses have a requirement that organs must be drained of any blood, and this is due to their interpretation of the Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament as prohibiting blood transfusion. And there are, you know, some other religions that also have certain restrictions when it comes to organ donation. So we're going to look at what Islam says regarding these things. So first of all, Islam is not the only religion that actually discusses organ donation, and it's not the only religion that actually has some concerns about the procedure and the process of organ donation and putting conditions on there. So it's very important to keep that in mind when we approach that. So let's look at what are the Islamic source texts, right? Whenever we're looking at something from an Islamic perspective, we want to understand what Islam says about something. We go back to the Quran, and we go back to the Sunnah, the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. So some of the verses and statements of the Prophet, peace be upon him, that have been used against organ donation are, one of them is a verse which says, and verily we have honored the children of Adam. It's in Surah Al-Isra, verse 70. And you say, well, wait a minute, what does that mean? God says that we have honored the children of Adam, meaning we've honored human beings. So they say, well, cutting open a human being just to transfer something is considered to be a dishonor to the human body, right? Whether it's alive or whether it's dead, different interpretations, whether it's going to be alive or dead. The second thing that they've used is a hadith of the Prophet, peace be upon him, where it says that he used to encourage giving charity and preventing and stopping muthla. Now this word muthla means, desecration, right? Or mutilation, okay? Mutilation of a body is considered to be something which was prohibited by the Prophet, peace be upon him. And in another hadith, he said, avoid muthla, avoid mutilation. So regardless of what's happening, you should always try to make sure you show respect to a dead body and never mutilate that body, no matter what, whether you're alive or whether it's dead. So there's a sanctity that exists in the human body that's based on that verse and is based on these hadith. One of them is in Bukhari, one of them is in Muslim. These are very strong sources. But again, it's not 100% clear-cut saying that organ donation is necessarily desecrating or mutilating the body. So we're going to look at that. The next hadith is where the Prophet, peace be upon him, he said, breaking the bone of a dead person is similar to breaking the bone of a living person. So based upon that, scholars have looked at that and said, well, wait a minute. That means that after the body has died, even if you break the bone of a dead body, It's like breaking the bone of a living body, which is a huge sin. That's a very bad thing to do, right? Break someone's bone, right? So the same thing applies to a dead body. This is a hadith in Abu Dawud, Ibn Majah, and the Musnad of Imam Ahmad. Its authenticity has been disputed among scholars. But if it's strong and if it's authentic, then it means that there is a part of desecration of the body that exists even after death. And some people have said maybe because, you know, the dead body can, you know, feel that as well even after it's dead. So there's a scholar by the name of Imam Tahawi. He lived about 1100 years ago. Okay, he lived about around 300 or so after Hijrah. He says in his book, Sharh Mushkil al-Athar, he says, this hadith shows that the bone of a dead person has the same sanctity and honor as the bone of a living person. So this was his commentary on that. And then you have another hadith related to this in the Musannaf of Ibn Abi Shayba. He says that the Prophet said, harming a believer after his death is similar to harming him in this life. So the way you cannot harm a living body, you should not be harming a dead body as well. So this was one of the main hadith on the subject. The second one is, it says that Allah's curse, the Prophet, peace be upon him, said, Allah's curse is on a woman who wears false hair or arranges false hair for other people, right? Now, these hair extensions and all that we're talking about, this is specifically talking about human hair. So Imam Nawawi is a very famous scholar. He wrote a book called Riyadhus Salihin. He wrote the 40 hadith of Imam Nawawi. Few people have heard of Imam Nawawi before. So he writes in his commentary on Sahih Muslim, and this hadith is in Muslim, is very authentic. He said, if human hair is being used for these hair, it wasn't just hair extensions, but it was like hair beautification. You add other parts of hair. If human hair is being used, it's unlawful by consensus, according to all scholars. Whether it's the hair of a man or it's the hair of a woman, because all the narrations of the Prophet, peace be upon him, prohibit this. And he says it's also unlawful to take benefit from the hair and all other organs of a human body, right? So all of these things, you're not allowed to take any benefit from them, okay? So looking at that, organ donation was not like a very widely discussed thing at that time, but scholars have looked back and said, well, wait a minute, you have a hadith about the Prophet, peace be upon him, saying not to use human hair from one person to another person, and this is something that is prohibited. So scholars have looked at that and said, well, this can be a reason for the prohibition of organ donation. Okay, and then they used another verse of the Quran, which we'll skip that one. So then the verses that have been used for permissibility of organ donation, I'm just presenting both sides here, okay? The verses that have been used for, it says that whoever saves the life of one person, it is as if they've saved the life of all humankind. This is chapter 5, verse 32. So it's saying that basically, look, it's not in the same category. If you're saving the life of a person by doing this, look, you've saved the life of the entire person. Even if you had to disrespect, let's say, human hair or a body or something like that, that's not such a big deal. You're saving an entire life. So breaking a bone of someone, according to the hadith, versus saving entire mankind, there should be some reason for that. There should be some leeway for that. And then another verse, it says that he, meaning Allah, has only forbidden you dead meat and blood and the flesh of swine and that on which any other name has been invoked besides that of Allah. So basically this verse says, these are the things which have been prohibited for you to consume as Muslims. You can't eat dead meat, meat that has already died. You can't have blood, right? And you can't eat pork, right? And whatever you eat, it should be slaughtered in the name of Allah. But then it says, but if one is forced by necessity, without intentionally disobeying, meaning disobeying Allah, nor transgressing the due limits, not eating like to their heart's extent, just going off and eating a bunch, then this person will not have any blame because Allah is forgiving and merciful. So the principle in Islam from this verse is that you are allowed to even eat pork when you are driven to necessity. So even though the original rule is you're not supposed to eat pork, if there's a need or a necessity, then you're allowed to do that in order to preserve your life. Therefore, even though we have other hadiths which are saying that, you know, breaking the bone of a dead person is considered to be a sin, or a human, you know, hair transplantation is considered to be a sin, when there is a need for it, that's going to actually be a necessity in order to, someone's life is in danger, then there's going to be an exception to even eat pork. Why wouldn't there be an exception for, you know, even dealing with a dead body or something like that? So that, those are the main verses and hadiths that are used in this discussion. Okay, so now there's been a lot of discussion on this among Muslim scholars. And I want to give you a history of transplant surgery to make you understand why there's a history of fatwas and why it matters to trace those fatwas. So let's take a look at the history of transplant surgery and how it's evolved over time. Okay, so that we can see the fatwas and how they've evolved over time and how they continue to evolve over time. So for my research, the first skin transplant that we know of in modern times was done in 1869. Okay, and then in 1906, the first transplant of a cornea was performed. All right. So I want you to think about that. Between 1869 and 1906, guess how many Muslim scholars are going to be talking about cornea transplants? None. Because it didn't happen, right? So if it doesn't exist, they're not going to be discussing it. It's not a really important issue unless they're just discussing it in theory. What if one person's eye was moved into another person's eye, but they're not able to do it until 1906? And then 1954 was the first successful kidney transplant to an identical twin. So what you're going to see is you say, well, wait a minute. What about those Muslim scholars from Al-Azhar and, you know, other universities and school? Why didn't the scholars in the 1930s and 1940s, why weren't they giving us fatwas and discussions? Fatwa is a religious verdict, right? Why weren't they doing research papers on kidney transplants? Because they weren't actually successfully done at that time, right? So if the literature is lacking, it's because the research, the ability to do that was actually lacking until this time. 1962 was the first kidney, lung, and liver transplants recovered from deceased donors. So the first ones were done by living donors. Now we have 1962, 1963, we have from deceased donors coming. So now all of a sudden, look, the fatwas that are being given in the 1950s are not focusing on deceased donors, people who have already died and were extracting their organs. Why? Because that was not something that was even being done. So it starts to become an issue after the 1960s. So now it gets presented. 1963 was the first organ recovery from a brain dead donor. And I'm going to explain what brain death is. It's a very, very important topic, which I'm going to address today in detail. 1967 was the first successful liver transplant. 67 was the first heart transplant as well. 68, bone marrow transplant. 1968 was the first definition of brain death that was based on neurological criteria by a Harvard Medical School ad hoc committee that was there to decide what the issue of brain death is. So I'm going to explain what brain death is in detail, but just understand that the concept of brain death really became prevalent in 1968. And it took a lot of time to even catch up. So this is a fairly new issue. Okay, 1976, they discovered cyclosporin. It had the ability to suppress the immune system that will actually prevent the rejection of transplanted organs. So now a lot of these have been rejected. It's not a very successful surgery. Now things start to change. Now it becomes more successful. So the discussion is going to be different now that it's becoming more of a successful surgery. 1990, first living donor lung transplant was performed. 1998, first successful hand transplant was performed in France. And in 2010, the first successful full face transplant was conducted in Spain. The entire face was transplanted. And now, actually, I think a head has been transplanted already. I forgot which country it was. So it just continues to evolve. And now the question becomes, well, wait a minute. What if you have somebody else's head? Right? Like, what does Islam say about that, right? It's not even your own head. It's going to get to a point where, not in the near future, we may actually have so many different body parts of other people, and we may actually have different body parts which are not even, they're robotic. So the question becomes, well, at which point are you not really you anymore, right? What constitutes you, right? Where is the definition of you as a person versus you being part of another person versus you being part of a machine, right? So that's actually something that we should probably start discussing now as Muslim scholars, because it's coming and it's around the corner. But let's focus on organ donation for today. So if we look at that, you see how things have been progressing over time. So if you go and you look and say, okay, well, wait a minute. When did Muslim scholars start discussing these things? When did they start talking about these things? Well, they started talking about them as soon as these procedures became common. So what happens is people in the medical community, especially Muslims in the medical community, in the medical field, they're going to go to Muslim scholars and say, well, wait a minute, you know, what does Islam say about this? Right? Because it's just not default, everything is allowed. These are serious moral considerations that we have. When we say moral considerations, Islamic considerations in Sharia, in Islamic law. The people who are doing this, mostly from Western countries, they also are concerned about the morality and the ethics involved in transplanting some of these things. So they go to their philosophers and they say, we need some guidance on what are the ethical implications of transplanting these things, because they don't necessarily have a religion. So people who are secular, they don't have a religion, they don't go to religious authority. So they go to their philosophers, who are their ethical, moral philosophers, to say, hey, what do you say about this, right? So they're discussing it, and Muslim scholars are discussing it, while Western ethicists are discussing it at the same time, okay? This is important to understand. So what do you find? So Muslim scholars, they go back. So when Muslim scholars get this issue, they go back and they say, well, what did Muslim scholars of the past talk about? Did they ever discuss anything that somewhat resembles these issues, so that we can kind of find some type of analogy so that we can understand how to think about these issues? Rather than just saying we just go to Quran and Hadith directly and we figure it out on our own, we go back to our intellectual history to see what have other people done. And you know what? Western ethicists who are secular, they have no religion, they do the same thing. They go back and say, let's read what Aristotle and Plato and, you know, all of these other philosophers had said about these type of issues, so that we're not starting from scratch. So Muslim scholars do the same thing. They go back, and some of the things they found was, they found, for example, Imam Samarqandi, he wrote a book called Tuhfatul Fuqaha, in volume 4, page 261. He mentions an issue. He's a Hanafi scholar. He mentions an issue. He lived about 300, 400, maybe 900 years ago, something like that. He says, if a pregnant woman died and the child in her stomach is still alive, then her stomach should be cut open in order to take the child out, because in that is saving the life of a human, thus the sanctity of a human body will be overlooked. So you see what he's saying? He's saying, look, we know in Islam, we have these hadiths, we know we have to honor the sanctity of the human body, we should not desecrate it. But if a woman dies and there's a child in there, we have to choose between two, and what we're going to do is we're going to cut open that body. It doesn't matter if we're desecrating the body, because there's a greater benefit there, therefore we have permission to go ahead and do that. Then we look at Imam Nawawi again, lived about 700 years ago or something like that. Imam Nawawi, the same one I was mentioning, he writes in his book called Al-Majmu', he talks about teeth transplantation. He talks about bone transplantation, which was happening probably during the time of Muslims, you know, when they were in their golden age. Muslims were very advanced in science and in medical practice. So he talks about teeth transplantation, bone transplantation, can you change this from one person to another, and in what categories and circumstances, and all of that stuff. So you have a discussion on that. Then you have another book called Al-Fatawa Al-Hindiya, or Fatawa Al-Alamghiriya, which is a group of Muslim scholars came together in India. This is about, again, like 600, 700 years ago, something like that. And they discussed this issue. And they said, if a person feared death due to hunger, and another person said to him, so let's say you're afraid of death, you think you're dying, another person comes along and says, cut off my hand and you can eat it. So Muslim scholars are thinking about this, say, what should we say? Or the person says, you can cut off part of me and you can eat part of me because you're dying. He says, it will be unlawful for him to do so. So the Hanafi scholars at that time, they said, it's not going to be allowed to do that. And he says, similarly, it is impermissible for a desperate person who's starving to cut part of his own self off and eat it. He says, you can eat pork, you can drink alcohol, but you can't cut off part of your own body and eat it. But then they said, but this is one opinion at the time. According to Imam Shafi'i, another very famous scholar, He said, it is permissible for a person who is dying out of hunger to consume the meat of another person. You can actually eat the human flesh of another person, right? So the scholars look at this and they say, okay, well, wait a minute. Okay, we're seeing a bunch of religious rulings or fatwas like this where we can kind of get an understanding of the issue where there has been some discussion, where there has been some difference of opinion and all of that stuff. So they go and they look at that, they look at the hadith that we talked about, they look at the verses that we talk about, and they said, now let's try to understand what kind of, you know, things are being done, and let's come up with a conclusion of what we want to say. So to summarize, in a nutshell, here is a list of most of the main fatwas coming out from the Muslim world on organ transplantation. So 1959, we have earlier ones documented, but I just have from 1959. So from 1959, you have the Grand Mufti of Egypt. He says that cornea transplants, because that's the first one that was happening. He said cornea transplants are permissible. We don't have many, you don't have kidney transplants, you don't have lung transplants at this time. So they're not really talking about that. They're talking about cornea transplants. It's permissible. All right. Then you have the next Grand Mufti of Egypt in 1966. He says that, yes, the other organ donations are permissible, but we need conditions. You cannot trade in organs. You cannot be selling organs. There need to be other restrictions and all of that. Okay, so that happens in Egypt. Then you have 1967, the following year, Mufti Muhammad Shafi'i, right? He is the Grand Mufti of Pakistan. He issues he writes a pamphlet, and he says organ donation is prohibited. Keep in mind, 1967. Okay, so what you do is you realize that he's someone who greatly influences the Indo-Pak subcontinent scholars at the time. And his son is the famous scholar, Mufti Taqi Uthmani, who's very well known in the world today. Until recently, he was abstaining from issuing a verdict on this issue. Then you have 1969, you have an international conference in Malaysia who says that organ donation is permissible in general. And then the Algiers Supreme Islamic Council says it's permissible. And then you have a bunch of other people. Supreme Council for Fatwas in Jordan says it's permissible. Senior Ulama Council in Saudi Arabia says it's permissible. The next fatwa. So you have all these fatwas coming down all the way from different groups, sometimes from an individual scholar, sometimes from a group and collective scholar from a country. And what happens is that while the technology is changing, sometimes the fatwa is changing. Okay, so we're going to see that in a moment. Now, out of this list, the most influential bodies that exist over here are a few. One of them is the IIFA of the OIC. IIFA is the Islamic Fiqh Academy of the OIC. OIC is the Organization for Islamic Cooperation or something like that. It's like the group of all these Muslim countries. It was established in 1981 in Jeddah, which is in Saudi Arabia, and they ruled that live donation and cadaveric donation, meaning deceased donation, is allowed in principle. But then they put a bunch of conditions there. But they said generally it's allowed. This fatwa is one of the most prominent fatwas that exists in terms of the one that people quote so much. It's from 1988, Islamic Fiqh Academy, Book of Decrees. It's even quoted on the government's website, organdonor.gov. If you look at the religions, they quote this fatwa and say, see, it's permissible for Muslims to go ahead and donate organs according to this fatwa, where you have a representation of many different scholars coming from many different parts of the world. So they say in principle. But then if you read the fatwa very clearly, they have this wording here and they say, all cases having to do with this topic are subject to further research and discussion, and they should be studied and discussed in a future session in the light of medical data and Islamic rulings. They're saying this is kind of like a preliminary statement that we're giving you, but we need a lot more, detail. We need more research. We need this. We need that. So don't assume that this is like some kind of be-all, end-all, binding type of thing. Okay. The second most influential body is the IFC, is the Islamic Fiqh Council, from the Muslim World League, which was established in 1977 in Mecca. Also has scholars coming from around the entire world, all meeting in Mecca, discussing issues like this. So in 1987, they had a fatwa that was released, which says basically the same thing, that live donation and cadaveric donation, deceased donation, is allowed. in principle. Okay? So you have these two very prominent bodies saying that it is permissible to, you know, have organ donation, kidney transplants, whether the body has died or whether the person is alive, it's all allowed. Okay, with some conditions, which we'll talk about. But then you have some very prominent scholars who said no, and they disagreed. One of them was, I said, Mufti Shafi'i, right? The Grand Mufti of Pakistan in 1964. He says it doesn't matter whether it's medically necessary or it's not necessary, it is not allowed. He's used the hadith of breaking the bone of a dead person. He says that Allah owns your body and you cannot give another part of your body to anyone else. And then he gives, you know, some other explanation. So he was a person who was very prominent in Pakistan and in India, right? And in Bangladesh, I assume, that who's really set the tone for many people saying, no, this should not be allowed. We should not be doing this organ donation. The second one is Sheikh Sha'rawi in Egypt. So those of you who have ever heard of Sheikh Sha'rawi, he's a very, probably the most famous scholar, popular scholar that ever came out of Egypt. He used to be on a TV show, he used to have a tafsir program, the most widely watched, you know, TV show in Egypt at the time. They say that the streets would just like shut down during his TV program. He's very, very popular. He just died recently in 1998. So Sheikh Sha'rawi, he also believed that organ transplantation was impermissible in all forms. And the reason why he said that was, he said that human beings do not own their bodies. They are a trust from God, and you cannot give it to someone else. And his opinion became very widespread on TV, because one time, he just spontaneously, during one of his TV shows, he just addressed it in an interview, and he said, how can you give a kidney that you yourself do not even own in the first place? Right? So, and then he talked about suicide and all of these things. And what happened was, is that when they interviewed Egyptians who were refusing organ donation or against the idea, they asked and said, well, why are you against it? He said, Sheikh Sha'rawi said so. So he's a very, very popular scholar. He's a graduate of Al-Azhar, right? So to say he's Mufassir and not Faqih, again, he's a graduate from Al-Azhar. He may not be a specialist in these issues, but this is his opinion. Then you have the Islamic Fiqh Academy of India in 1989. They said that deceased donation is prohibited, but live donation is allowed. So you see the, you know, very prominent Fiqh Council in India. And then you have the Grand Ayatollah Sistani, who is the leader of the Shias of Iraq, not Iran, the leader of the Shias in Iraq. He said it is not permissible to remove any organ from the dead body of a Muslim, right, for a transplant or anything like that. And he has a whole fatwa against that. So he says this is not allowed, and he's very staunch against that. Now you notice that in Iran it's different, and in Iraq it's different. And these are the Shia school or the Shia sect in that sense. So these are the most popular fatwas that are pro and the most popular fatwas that are against. Or you could say the most influential that influence the Muslim community around the world. Then you find, I'll take questions at the end, inshallah. Unless it's directly related, it's like a clarification. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. So the son, Mufti Taqi Usmani, is the son of the Grand Mufti. He said that I don't have an opinion. Recently he said, I don't have an opinion on this issue, although I think there might be some leeway for it, I'm undecided. So that's what he said. So he's not following his father's opinion, he's not against it, but he's not coming out and saying he's for it yet either. So that's the one. And then you have the Islamic Religious Council of Singapore. Right, in 1973, they issued a fatwa which says that if you make a pledge in the form of a will and you say that you want to give some of your organs, it is not allowed because you have to honor the human body and this is dishonoring the human body, 1973. And then what happened is in 1985, they reconsidered and they said now that there's medical advancements, and you saw the chart before, you saw, you know, the different things being done. Now that there's medical advancements, we have reconsidered our position, and it is allowed. And we were just saying the previous fatwa because we were concerned about, we wanted to be a little bit on the safe side because we still were not sure what's going to happen in terms of technology and all of that. But they said now it's allowed because protecting human life is more important than protecting the dignity of the body. Just like what Imam Samarqandi had said, you know, centuries ago, right? Then there's another fatwa that came out of England, out of the UK. And there's fatwas that coming out of the Netherlands and many European countries. And what you find is that these fatwas issued by Muslim scholars tend to be influenced by political circumstances. So it's unfortunate. So what you find is, for example, in England, there's a bunch of people who hate Muslims. We call them Islamophobes or Islam haters, right? They started saying that, hey, you know what? In England, there's a very large population of Indo-Pakistani, you know, Muslims. So if they're following either the India Fiqh Council or they're following Mufti Muhammad Shafi'i, and they're saying we don't do donation, then you see that that's one of the reasons why donations may be low. And that's not the only reason. Again, we said there's culture, there's family pressure, there's this, there's that. So many different reasons. So the so these Islam haters in England and in the Netherlands, they said, well, you know what? We need to pass a new law. And the new law is going to be specifically for Muslims. That since Muslims supposedly are very low, they're the lowest in the organ donor category of people who are signing up to be organ donors, which is not true, by the way, but they claim that. Said, therefore, we should not allow them to have organs if they're not going to sign up for the organ donor list as well. So the Muslim scholars looked at that and they said, whoa, now we have a problem. This becomes part of Islamophobia. This becomes part of discriminating against Muslims in particular, and this rule is designed to actually cause Muslims a problem. So what ended up happening was, is that, you know, some of the Muslim scholars, they said, now we have a problem. We're trying to survive as Muslims, as a minority in Europe, and we're being discriminated against, and we're a small minority, and we need to do something which is going to, you know, establish ourselves in Europe. So what happens now is you find that there's more leniency in kind of adopting and acknowledging any type of general medical practice that comes out in order to kind of appease the society of, you know, making sure that, you know, we can exist and remain in Europe and all of that. But what you found is when you find researchers who actually investigated this, they said that one of the most common reasons for not wanting to be an organ donor is not just religion. It's actually one of the most common reasons of wanting to donate an organ in your community is feeling a sense of solidarity with the broader community and believing that donated organs are put to good use. Right? It's a precondition. Now the problem is if you study Muslims in Europe and you ask them whether they feel a sense of solidarity with the general Muslim community, outside of England maybe, you look at France, you look at Spain, you look at Italy, you look at the Netherlands, you'll find that Muslims in Europe are very different from Muslims in America. They tend to be, you know, there was immigration of more blue-collar workers and all that, but they tend to be more marginalized, especially in places like France, even in Germany, even in, especially Netherlands, especially Spain, especially Italy. They're very marginalized, so you can see that it's not only a religious factor that is causing them to not be so interested in donating organs per se, but it's actually part of their sense of solidarity they feel with that community that exists. So you have this few fatwas that were passed in Europe that are very much not in line, or they're more accommodating then you find all the other fatwas coming out of the Muslim world. And this is one of the reasons for it, because politics plays a role in giving a fatwa when Muslims are living as a minority and they feel they're a persecuted minority, and they feel that, you know, when they're trying to decide between this and that, it's a little bit of a gray area. They want to kind of choose the gray area on the side where it's going to be in their own best interest from a political perspective. So we have to keep all of those things in mind when we're analyzing these fatwas and understanding them. So with that, there are certain sub-issues, right? So again, going back to this list, if you look at the list across the board, the vast majority, I know it's kind of small, the vast majority of all of these bodies have said that it is permissible in principle. Organ donation is permissible in principle, the vast majority. Now, the minority is a small minority, but it's a significant minority. Okay? So it's not just like some dismissed minority, it's a significant minority. But at the same time, people should not confuse this and think that because you have all the X boxes checked in the permissible category, that this is some kind of blanket approval that all of these people are saying that, you know, it's okay. So there's a paper that came out by Van den Branden and Brokart. All right, Van den Branden and Brokart in 2011, they said, we analyzed 70 English Sunni e-fatwas in addition to the old ones, right? And we subjected them to an in-depth text analysis in order to reveal the key concepts in the Islamic ethical framework regarding organ donation and blood transfusion. And what they said was, our analysis shows that all 70 fatwas allowed for organ donation and blood transfusion. What they didn't mention is the detailed conditions that were attached to the permissibility of that. So that's what we're going to go through now. Okay, so hopefully the first topic is it allowed or is it not allowed? But then what are the conditions under which it's allowed? It's very important to go through that. So the first condition is pretty simple, is that there must be a genuine medical need, right? And there should be no harm done. This is a general principle in Islam, that there's a need or a necessity and there's no harm. So what does that mean? So for example, in some of the fatwas you find, it says it's haram to haram means prohibited. It is haram to transplant an organ on which life depends, such as transplanting the heart from a living person to another person. Now you say, well, that's pretty obvious, right? Why would you even need that fatwa? Well, you need that fatwa because there's going to be people who are living in societies where powerful people, wealthy people, are potentially going to influence or coerce or convince someone to give their heart out for the sake of donating. You say, we're going to take care of your entire extended family. And there are people who would sign up for that. So what happens is, this fatwa, which seems like it's not even needed, you know, when you first read it, it's actually very important. It's very important to clarify that you cannot do that under the principle of no harm. Let me give it to you. First one, under the principle of no harm. So no harm to the donor. The second is that if you're giving an organ from a living person, and its removal is going to cause an essential function to cease, even though his life doesn't depend on it, you are not allowed to do that. So for example, can you take both corneas of the eyes? If you take one cornea of the eye, at least you have one eye, you can still function. You can donate that, potentially, right? But you cannot take both. If you take both, it's essential function of life to be able to see. If you're going to lose both corneas, you're going to be a problem. So they said that is prohibited because you're giving up an essential function of life. You should not be allowed to do that. Now that's important because, again, you're going to have the same issue. You're going to have people in societies who are pressuring, you know, powerful people, wealthy people are pressuring other people to give that up. And they say, look, I'm willing to give up my eyesight in order to get my family out of poverty. People would be willing to do that. And they say, no, this is not allowed under this principle. So the idea of genuine medical need, the idea of no harm, either to the recipient or to the donor. It's a pretty basic one, pretty much agreed upon by everyone. The next one is absolute respect to the human body. So what does that mean? It means that the process of organ donation needs to uphold the dignity and the honor of the dead human being, right? So we're talking about the human body. When you're alive, you know, they're going to cut you up, they're going to sew you back together. But what about the dead body? The dead body, when it's cut up, it needs to be done in a way that's actually necessary, right? There's a genuine medical need of cutting up that body. And you're going to make sure that you're honoring that body by making sure you put it back together properly and a correct burial is going to take place. There's no unnecessary delay in the burial and so on and so forth. Like in Islam, we're not allowed to cremate bodies. We're not allowed to desecrate bodies and stuff like that. So this becomes a problem, actually. The reason why it becomes a problem is you have one Muslim family. You know, we were sitting in a group of scholars at the Fiqh Council of North America discussing an issue, and one of the imams was there and said, I have some member of my community whose son signed the donor card and died in a car accident. They took his body. He was a teenager. They took his body. And when the body came back, everything was gone. All the organs, all the bones were gone. Even the muscles were taken out. It was like a bundle of skin given back to the family. And the family was very disappointed. They said, what is this? You know, what did you do? And they said, well, you know, he signed the donor card, and that's what happened. So he said, well, this would be an example of not absolute respect to the human body. To what extent was that necessary? To what extent was that something that was, something important? So that becomes an issue. Another issue is, and this is not only for Muslims. So there was another guy by the name of George Eisenbeiss. He died in 2011. So you have this in courthouse news. So there was a lawsuit that was filed against the California Transplant Donor Network. And the reason why there was a lawsuit is because the family said, yes, we're going to give his body to take some of the organs out, but we insist that we want to make sure that the body is still intact so that we can have an open casket funeral. So now in Islam, we don't do this open casket thing. Right. Okay. But, you know, in many Christians and other religions, they do the open casket and they want to decorate and they want everyone to see. So they say, we want the body back in a way that we can do an open casket so that everyone can see and it still body looks good. And they said, yeah, no, don't worry about it. You know, and then it comes back and the body is like, you know, while the open casket is going on, like he's bleeding, the hand is missing, the leg is missing, all sorts of things. And they're like, what happened here? Like, so they filed a lawsuit against him and said, you promised us that you were going to do such and such thing, but you didn't. So what's happening is you find that the Islamic definition of respect, absolute respect to the human body, is different than the American definition of respect to the human body. So they're going to say, yeah, we're going to respect the body. But there's a different type of respect that they have in terms of our standards and in terms of their standards. So that's another problem, okay? So that's something to keep in mind. So when people sign up for the donor card, they always ask, do you sign up, do you not sign up? It's state by state, whether you can opt out, whether you can restrict things, whether they're going to even, you know, follow through on what you want versus whether they're going to do what they think is best and then tell you, hey, we respected the body, it suffices, okay? The third one is no reproductive organs. So this is pretty much agreed upon, that you cannot transplant reproductive organs because they're carrying genetic inheritance from the donor. So, you know, all of the internal sex organs and stuff like that, you cannot transplant because what's going to happen now is if you have children, what's happening with, you know, whose children are these? Anything that contains the genetic material, per se. The next one is explicit consent. And this becomes a really big issue even in Islamic law. So explicit consent means that the donor himself, the person themselves, must be willingly giving permission to donate that organ. Right? You should not be coerced and forced to decide, you know, that someone else is going to make a decision on your behalf. But then you have some concerns here. So the question, first question is, what if the person died and they did not indicate their permission? Can relatives decide on their behalf that this is what they want to do or not? So the vast majority of scholars have said no. There are some scholars like Sheikh Tantawi from Egypt, they said yes, they can. They're allowed to go ahead and say this. Even if they didn't want it, your relatives, they can go ahead and make that decision. Now again, this comes with ethical problems, right? Assuming that, you know, you'll have some families say, you know what, this is really what they would have wanted, and maybe that's what they would have wanted. And you have some other families, always was a disobedient child. I doubt anyone would do that. But, you know, there's going to be a reason for that, right? So the problem is, who's going to decide? Who has to decide? Are relatives allowed to decide or not? Then you have another issue. The Kuwait Fatwa Council in 1979, they ruled that you're allowed to transport organs from the deceased with or without the deceased's consent, meaning the state can decide for you when you die whether or not we're going to take your body. So the state has ownership of your body to decide, even if you don't want to, even if your relatives don't want to, the state comes in and says, we have made the decision to do that. So it becomes a very big ethical issue. So it's an Islamic issue, And it's an ethical issue among Western ethicists, and it's not been resolved. So you find that in some Eastern European countries, some former Soviet Union countries, there's a different standard than you find in other countries. So it becomes another concern. Then, the issue of compensation. No compensation should be allowed for selling an organ. Now again, if you remember the statistics that I mentioned, right? A person is dying every 2 hours and 30 minutes or so, right? I mentioned, because they can't get an organ. So I say, well, you know what? People are waiting. So just imagine all those people who are on waiting lists and they're dying because of organs. They would be like, hey, wait a minute. You know, I'm willing to pay whatever it takes. I'll give $1 million. So in 1999, if you remember the tech boom, eBay was popular. So someone put a listing up there, one functional human kidney on eBay. And the bid started going up. It reached $5.7 million. And it was not a joke, right? Someone was ready to pay on eBay $5.7 million, and then eBay had to block the auction and shut it down. Because it's not allowed. Because against the law. It's against the law in America. It's against the law in pretty much every single country in the world except one. Does anyone know what country that is? It's not Pakistan. It's not India. It's Iran. It's Iran. And I'm going to come to that right now. So, here's the issue now, okay? The issue, first of all, is that when we say that you cannot receive compensation for organ donation, right? And I just said that there's an international law. Everyone says you're not allowed to sell organs, right? The reasoning behind it is they don't want the rich being privileged over the poor when it comes to selling organs. But when there's legal loopholes. And what a lot of people don't know, even people who are like hardcore, you know, we've got to sign up everyone on the organ donor list, and you know, they're very active in politics and all that stuff. What they don't know is that there's a legal loophole in America, in the American law, about selling organs. So you can't sell an organ, but you can sell tissue. So there was an article in 2012 in the Huffington Post, that says, that the title of the article is Abusing the Gift of Tissue Donation. So basically what they wrote is that families often don't know that when they okay donations to nonprofit organizations, such as the California Transplant Donor Network, the tissue regularly goes to for-profit companies in order to feed a billion-dollar industry that uses those tissues, from everything to repairing a knee to plumping up a penis. Okay? And then it says, few states in America require that companies tell their families that their loved one's tissue can be sold overseas. They can be sent to a for-profit company, or they can be used in cosmetic procedures such as wrinkle fillers and nose jobs. So what's happening is, that boy I gave you an example, they took everything out, right? There is no law in America that prevents those tissues from being sold to a for-profit company. In fact, it is very routinely sold to a for-profit company, and people who are, you know, signing up for that don't realize that because the California Transplant Donor Network is a nonprofit organization. So I'm giving it to a nonprofit organization. But the nonprofit organization is selling it to a for-profit corporation and is exporting it to another country, or it's going into people's noses or whatever it may be. And that is desecration of the body, because not absolute respect to the human body, not for a genuine medical need. So I understand people don't like wrinkles, but cutting up someone's body in order to fill your wrinkles is not considered to be a valid excuse according to Islamic law. So that becomes a problem, right? And then they said in 2010, there was a study by researchers, Laura Siminoff and Heather Traino, where they said 70% of donor families said that they would object to a loved one's tissue going to a for-profit business. Yet, fewer than 1 in 5 said that they were told that the harvested tissues is actually going to a for-profit company. So there's a lack of transparency in knowledge about this. And Muslims should not be naive with regards to this as well. So that's when it comes to tissues. But organs, you cannot sell. It's not legal to sell that. Except in Iran. So Iran is the only country, or actually, sorry, it may not be the only country in the world. It's the only quote-unquote Islamic country or country with majority Muslim population that not only allows monetary compensation of living unrelated donors, but actually partially funds payments to the donor. So the government themselves will actually partially fund payments. Now the reason why they do that, again, they're from the Shia school of thought, they've issued this fatwa, but Ayatollah Sistani from Iraq is completely against this as well. But Iran does this, and their argument is this. The argument is, people need the organs, and other people need wealth, and we're trying to save life. And even though, yeah, you could talk about potential exploitation of the poor and this and that, we are intervening, we are helping, and we put certain conditions in there. So the one condition is, no one under the age of 18 can do that. No one over the age of 45 is going to be accepted for a donation, right? And then some people will say, you know, I'm sure a lot of people from America, as much as they hate Iran, they would love to fly over there and get themselves a kidney or a liver or whatever it may be. But there's one more problem. Iran has a rule, and they said that the donor and the recipient needs to be from the same nationality, so tourist transplantation is forbidden. We will not accept anyone from outside. If you're an Iranian, you can donate to another Iranian. We don't want people coming from all over the place and stuff like that. Okay? So that is, so this becomes an issue now. Again, we have the Islamic rule. All Muslim scholars, right, from the mainstream Muslim scholars, they say you're not allowed to sell that. It should be for goodwill purposes and all of that stuff. But then you have Western countries, they say the exact same thing. You're not allowed to sell that. It's very, very bad. But then here we have an issue, is that can an argument be made that the dictatorship Iran actually cares more about the life of people than the secular liberal democracies who are saying that we care about life? It's an interesting question, but again, all the scholars have said it's not allowed, so I'll just leave that for another case. The idea of religion mattering. Does religion matter in terms of the transplantation and all of that? This is an issue in the Muslim world. I know Americans, people who are Muslim minorities, you know, they're probably like, no, religion shouldn't matter, that's discrimination, this and that. Okay, get out of your Western mentality for a moment, right? When you're in a Muslim majority country, right, it matters. So you have Sheikh Qaradawi, you have many other scholars, they say that if an organ is being donated, it needs to go from a Muslim to a Muslim, it should not be going to a non-Muslim. And they have all of their explanation. And they say if there's an apostate, someone who's left Islam, a Muslim's organ should not be going to that apostate or to a non-Muslim who is at war with Muslims, sorry, to clarify that, right? So all of these things play a role. I'm not going to get into that issue. It's not so relevant to the Muslims here. Yeah, in America or in the West. The last one is very important, is brain death. So the question is brain death absolute death? So what is brain death, right? So the ad hoc committee of the Harvard Medical School to examine the definition of brain death, they issued this report in 1960, whatever I mentioned before. They said that brain death is the state of what we call irreversible coma. So here's the issue, the way it came about. People who are in a coma, can we harvest their organs, right? So some people were looking at that and saying, yes, we should. There's other people lying. We don't know when this person is going to wake up from their coma. And some people, they unplug people when they're in a coma and they die, right? We don't want them sitting on life support. So wait a minute. These organs are perfect. They can save the life of somebody else. There's oxygen circulating. They're still alive. They're still breathing. These are the best organs we can get. Let's get it from a person in a coma. Then you have other people say, well, wait a minute. That's unethical because what if they wake up from their coma 2 years later? What if they have the potential to wake up? So they defined a new term called irreversible coma. And they said, if we can figure out that there is some line, and of course it's never 100% clear cut, but if we can figure out there's some line between coma and irreversible coma, we're going to call this irreversible coma, we're going to call it brain death. And brain death is basically brainstem is not functioning, and we think, or we have a good reason to believe that there's no possibility of functioning. So they said specifically that it no longer functions and has no possibility of functioning again for all it's for all practical purposes dead. So the idea is if the brain stem or the brain is for all practical purposes dead, then we're going to call that brain death. Now the problem with the idea of brain death is what does death mean? What is the concept of death, right? So medical practitioners, they don't have a clear, you know, people are like, well, why is so many, you know, some people always come and they'll be like, why is so many different fatwas? Why can't the scholars be clear? All the doctors are not clear on death. If you ask them, when is the moment of death? They're like, how do we define that, right? How do you define what death is? So the reality is death is a process, like birth is a process, right? Same thing, when do you define when life begins, right? Something is people are not clear on. Medical practitioners are not clear on it. Medical practitioners and researchers and scientists and all, they're not clear on when you define exactly when death happens, especially now with technology, right? You can keep everything moving, all your heart is beating, all your systems are functioning. When are you considered to be dead? Just like I asked you in the beginning, right? When you have robotic parts and you have a head transplant from another person, when are you considered to not be you anymore, right? When are you considered to be a different person? These are very difficult issues, and they're not medical issues. They're actually philosophical issues. So that's why scholars, Muslim scholars, and Western moral philosophers are actually the people who make this decision. And one of the problems that happened was, in many of these councils, the Muslim scholars, they just said, well, let the doctors figure out what death is. If they said the person is dead, then he's dead. Doctors are going and say, well, wait a minute. We don't know what death is. We're not sure. We're asking you. And the scholars go back and say, no, we're asking you figure it out. So there's a problem. So in Egypt, this happened. There's a very interesting quote. Let me tell you the quote here. So there was a quote from one of the papers on transplants in Egypt, an analysis of doctors' discourse, a journal called Body and Society. So the doctors were writing, they said, when we and our professors, we speak to the muftis at the Darul Ifta, which is in Egypt, it's a place where fatwas are issued, they say it's halal, organ donation is halal, but it leaves so much up to the doctors that we're not certain about it. So they're saying it's halal and you figure out the moment of death and all of the other stuff. They're like, but we don't know the moment of death. We have a problem ourselves. We're trying to figure that out. He says that the doctors themselves saying we're not comfortable with some of the fatwas that are coming up because they're not clarifying things for us, right? So again, here's a diagram of the beginning of life, end of life. You notice there's a curve. So there's a death is a process. So at what moment do you declare a person dead? It is not very clear cut. So what you have is a bunch of questions, right? The first questions are, what are the vital functions of the brain? Who is going to determine what the vital functions of the brain are? Is there a conceptual basis within Islamic law for brain death? Is there some basis for that, right? The idea that was brain death was basically determined for the purpose of procuring organs. It doesn't have any other medical function. It was defined for that specific reason. Basically, we need organs from people. We want them to technically be living in a sense because that's when the organs are the best. If they die, oxygen is not coming to the organs, they begin to deteriorate immediately. How can we figure out an exact perfect line where we can get the organs right at this moment while maintaining the integrity of the organs so that they can be used in a proper manner, right? So that's what, so a bunch of questions come up. Then the question is, do physicians or scientists have to determine the irreversibility of these brain functions as a matter of fact or as a matter of procedure? And then what level of certainty do you need to figure out whether this person has been declared brain dead or not? So there's a study that was done, and they said basically, in medically, the prognosis of death is mistaken for the diagnosis of death. And if you're in the medical field, there's a difference between diagnosis and prognosis. I'm not going to get into it due to time. So here is a list of fatwas which actually talk about whether or not brain death is accepted. And what you find is some of the very prominent Muslim scholar councils accepted brain death as a definition of real death. And they said it's okay because that's how the medical industry told us. The scientists and the doctors told us that brain death is death. They say, yeah, sounds good. So we'll go ahead and accept it. Otherwise, cardiac death, cardiac pulmonary, you know, death is the original definition of death. This new definition of death called brain death, which was something that came out, you have a bunch of fatwas where people are allowing that and saying, yes, it's going to be fine. But remember I said about the Singapore fatwa, how it changed? In the beginning, they said organ donation is not allowed. With the advancement of, when they understood the issue better, and with the advancement of technology, they said, oh no, no, organ donation is allowed, now we understand it better, and now there's more advancement in technology. The irony is that now that technology is developing, now that Muslim scholars and medical practitioners and philosophers are better understanding what brain death, quote-unquote, actually is, they're reversing and changing their opinion and saying brain death is a very problematic concept. We gave the fatwa in the 80s and the 90s that, hey, well, Harvard said brain death is brain death and this and that. Now they're changing their mind, and they're not the only ones changing their mind. Even Western philosophical ethicists are changing their mind and saying this is a very problematic concept. It's something that we need to go ahead and look at in more detail. So with that, I got to conclude because we're about to pray. There's a body called the Fiqh Council of North America, which I'm part of. They issued a fatwa in December 2018, which basically outlined a summary of these principles. And I'm going to summarize them real quick. Organ donation and transplantation is permissible in principle with conditions. It's an act of charity when you have a good intention. Condition number one, you cannot sell the organ. Condition number two, there should be no harm to the donor or the patient and needs to be minimized as much as possible. Condition number, what was that? Four? Three. Condition number three, you need to have informed consent of the donor. Not of their family, not of the state. It has to be of the donor. Number four, they cannot take out vital organs while living, like the heart and stuff like that. Condition number five, the deceased donation after cardiac death, deceased donation can only be done after cardiac death, not after brain death. Right? This becomes a problem of heart transplantation and all of that stuff. Number six, no reproductive organs, the ova, the sperm, uterus, all of that cannot be donated. And on the last thing, they said, on face and partial brain transplants, we have no opinion, and we're calling for people to do more research. And on the brain death, we're calling on people to do more research. So after discussing for 3 years, I was in all three of the meetings. This is the final thing that has been released, and we're waiting for that. So that's the kind of the conclusion. And we'll conclude here, inshallah. If you want questions, there's questions. Stick around. I'll stick around after the prayer, inshallah. And you can come to the back of the musalla and ask me questions, inshallah ta'ala. Subhanakallahumma bihamdik, nastaghfirukallah wa natubu ilayk. Assalamu alaikum.
Ashhadu an